One Thursday evening, back at the end of April, a restaurant in Barcelona, Spain, took a last-minute booking for a special reservation. The staff there were stunned when the guests finally walked in. They had taken a booking for President Barack Obama, Steven Spielberg, the film director, and American music legend, The Boss. Obama, Spielberg, and Bruce Springsteen, an unlikely trio if ever there was one, sat down at a table together to eat, causing quite the kerfuffle in the process. Classic question of interviewers or amongst friends is, who would be your fantasy dinner guests? Now, you might not choose these three, but folks often opt for key historical figures, movie stars, great musicians or artists. But the thought experiment rarely goes past the fun and amusement of putting together the guest list. Any conversation that might take place, the way each guest might actually relate to the other, that's not part of the fantasy. The fantasy is the idea of the gathering, not the gathering itself. The fantasy feels good. It's full of possibility. The realities and difficulties of such a gathering are left entirely unexplored. When we hear the gospel stories of Jesus sitting down for dinner with different groups of people today, with tax collectors and sinners, what kind of a scene do we picture? A large, rambunctious gathering, lots of smiling faces, plenty of food to share, laughter, an animated conversation. Perhaps. It's all possible, of course, but given the realities of the time, the divisions of the time, the very real pressures of life of that time, an easy flow of conversation with plenty of good humor seems unlikely. Although we can't know for sure, there's no reason to assume that a gathering of tax collectors and those identified as sinners, along with the disciples and Jesus, there's no reason to assume that such a gathering would have been all fun and games. Just as there's no reason to assume that organizing a meal like this today would be much of an easy, good time. Let's be clear. This isn't a gathering of the poor, of desperate children and widows, of the sick and destitute, those who had nothing, those who lived on the very edge of survival. This meal is not to be understood as an act of service or charity. The people who came to eat with Jesus that day, the tax collectors and the sinners, each hold a very real place in the system, in the society of the time. New Testament scholar Amy Jill Levine says, a modern analogy for the sinners mentioned in this context would be international drug dealers, white-collar insider traders, sex traffickers, arms dealers, quite the crew. She says the term best describes people who have willingly separated themselves from the welfare of the community for profit. We might think of them as people who have consciously decided to make their own way, hold a certain kind of their own power on their own terms, build their own wealth, knowing what they were doing was inherently wrong and damaging the lives of the community, the society they were part of. The tax collectors, agents of the state, and these sinners likely have more than sufficient means, but the ways in which they've chosen to live, specifically the ways in which they harm their communities, means they're excluded, cast out, separated from the life of the whole. Being mindful of the historical context here prevents us from drifting too far away from the real impact this scene would have had on the community working so hard to do the right thing. These are not fantasy dinner party guests, and such a table was alarming to all those who witnessed it. Alarming and scandalous. Jesus, the disciples, eating a meal with agents of the oppressive regime, cheek by jowl with some of the most dangerous, least scrupulous, and unethical individuals you might imagine. Who is this Jesus? What on earth is he attempting to do? We must put ourselves in the Pharisees' place in this story and imagine, really try to feel how we each might respond if confronted by a sight so scandalous. The Pharisees see Jesus, the learned rabbi, so knowledgeable about the scriptures, clearly a powerful healer, one with surprising wisdom and clarity of understanding when it comes to the law. This Jesus is breaking bread with the very people who are tearing society apart. The Pharisees, understandably aghast at what they're witnessing, ask the disciples, what in the heck is going on? Why is Jesus eating with these people? Coming as it does in the midst of a string of healing stories, this, we must assume, is also a story of healing. Healing. Because nowhere in it do we hear Jesus chastise or blame those in his company. Neither here does he judge or shame them. Instead, all that we're told is he sits with and eats with those who came for dinner at the house. Jesus connects. He intentionally connects with the most unlikely, some might say unsavory, crew. For sure, these are not Jesus' fantasy dinner guests. Rather, this is a gathering, an act born out of covenantal love for God and for neighbor, for all neighbors. This is no act of service, but an intentional healing act, a prioritization of connection through which the healing power of God may flow out into the world. Earlier in Matthew's gospel, Jesus says, "You've heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven." This is what healing love can look like. It's bold and unexpected, and it's likely all around quite uncomfortable and hard. But it was, and it is, so very needed, necessary. Jesus eats with tax collectors and sinners that we might know the true healing power of connection, perhaps especially with those we might avoid, with those we might never choose to be with and come to know. The healing is in connections we might think are impossible or even pointless. Because in and through connection, sought out and motivated by love, as Christians, we believe there is the healing power of God. This table fellowship is not the stuff of fantasy, but of covenant faithfulness. It's not about the ideal gathering, but about the healing that's possible when divided, separated people gather and connect. We do this every Sunday when we gather around this table. We must also do this out there in the world.